Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and our first guest now with us by phone has been collecting a particular type of photo for a while, and she's put 100 of them into a book. Author and Oscar-nominated documentary filmmaker Emmy Humes is with us, and her new book is called The Only Woman and features group photos where there's only one woman present. And then she tells us about each of the women in those photos. So, are you attracted to photos like that? Have you been in a group with just, maybe you were the only woman, or just you were a man among only one woman? How did that affect group dynamics? Love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Emmy Humes, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Larry. I'm so excited to be on the show. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I got to tell you, I got your book. I opened it up, just opened it up to any picture, and I happened to open to the Aisha Evans photo, which I want to talk about a little later, which was really striking. And so then I went back to the beginning. I read your fascinating introduction, and then I would look at a. I started on the first page. I'd look at a photo, then I'd read what you'd written about it. And then I'd take another look at that photo, and at some point I looked up, and I'd been involved in your book for 3 hours.
Oh, my goodness gracious. I'm so happy to hear that. You're my target audience. There you go.
I'm telling you, it was it's just a, to me, very fascinating. Well, tell us about the photo that started this all for you, the one with Shirley Clarke.
Well, that photo, Shirley Clarke was a radical filmmaker in the 60s. She was kind of an extraordinary figure in the film world. And she was often described as the only woman filmmaker of her time. And I was actually in Madison, Wisconsin, at the great, great archive that you guys have out there. And I found that picture that's in the book of Shirley Clarke, radical filmmaker, 1962, surrounded by guys, all the guy filmmakers. And she's sort of like the heart of it. And so I became a little bit obsessed. I was researching her. I was researching her life because I make documentaries about people, biographies. And so I was working on her story. And I just started getting a little obsessed with this picture. And I found a lot of other ones of her where she was literally, I found several pictures of her, really amazing photos, where she was literally the only woman of the group, you know, the only one in the room, in the frame. And, you know, I of course relate heavily, having been a woman documentary filmmaker for all these years. But I sort of couldn't stop looking at them. And then they were reminding me of something. There was like a bell going ding, 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 ding. And I finally realized, yeah. It's that photo I remember from forever. There's a famous picture that was ringing my memory bell. It's a photo from Life magazine of all the great abstract expressionist painters. And it's like 1952 or something. And it's just a terrific, it's a great composition of all these super famous dudes like, you know, Jackson Pollock and Rothko and de Kooning and you name it. And then there's this one woman sort of sticking out on top. And everyone who sees the picture is like, well, who's she? You know? And I sort of pulled that one out and I was like, yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. And then I started thinking, wait a minute. And so I had all these like ringing bells and vaguely sort of distantly ringing. And I realized that it's like I started with artists and there were all these pictures of all the different schools of art, you know, so it'd be like the Surrealists or the Bauhaus or, you know, you name it. And very often these art guy, you know, all the male famous artists would be pictured in some, you know, either formal picture or at a part, you know, at a gathering of some kind, and there would be at most one woman. And I started to get really obsessed then. I was like, okay, what is going on here?
How many did you collect?
Oh, I have hundreds of them. I mean, really a lot, especially once I started getting going, you know, because friends would send them to me. And I mean, I just, so I have accumulated quite a number of them from all over the world. And, you know, ever since the start of photography. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Collecting the 100 for the book was not easy.
And you decided this is the time to put some of your collected photos into a book.
Yeah, well, I was really excited about that, obviously. You know, I've never done a book. So, but it actually, the book is a little, has some, it has some overlaps with the documentary film.
That's what I thought.
Oh, you did? Yeah, there you go. You get it.
Well, how did you decide which photos to include?
Well, that was a really interesting process, and I did it in collaboration with the publishers, Fiden, which is a great art publishing house. But, you know, I had so many, so it was kind of a trick. Really, it was a little bit just idiosyncratic and random of which photos do I like the best. And that's just a completely, you know, I don't know. There's no science to it. You know, it's from the image and the story. But we, you know, I was also trying to show the range of situations that the pictures include, because there's a whole lot of different things going on in the pictures. They're all different. And then on another weird way, they're all the same.
Yeah.
So I was trying to get, there was something that really pleased me when it was like, oh, I found the only woman example for the Bolsheviks, the communists, you know, and like in Moscow in 1922. And then, you know, the capitalists, you get some incredible board meeting with Catherine Graham, you know, and it's like, so wherever you look, whatever corner of life, I was finding that same phenomenon. And that was really part of how I made the selection, was to show that, like, it's the beat poets. Of course, the beat poets are going to have at most one woman, right? Mm-hmm. At least that's firmly part of their reputation. It's not completely fair, but anyway, the beats. But then I also found this amazing photograph of the American Association of Sugar Beet Technologists.
Yes.
So it pleased me to have the beets and the beets. I put them next to each other in the book, but I don't think anyone will notice that. But, you know, it's like, wherever you go, this same thing was happening. So that was what was going on for me.
And, you know, and there are some photos of women's names and histories kind of lost in time.
Yeah, there are some that are completely anonymous and mysterious, and then there are also quite a few that are very famous. So, you know, it runs the gamut, and that was part of the selection, too, was showing, like, ones that we know. There's Madame Curie, and there are a lot of other really great examples of famous women. There's Marlene Dietrich. There's Margaret Thatcher. There are several others that everyone will recognize, or most of us will recognize anyway. But then some of my favorites are completely anonymous and mysterious ones where we really don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
And it makes you wonder about the story. So some of them I was able to find the story and really track down the research, which was incredibly fun. But some of them remained mysterious.
And you gave yourself a set of rules about the photos in the book, and
yeah,
you've kind of talked about it a little bit, but tell us what those rules were and why you had them.
Yeah, well, that's true. It was sort of like a game, right? Collecting was a bit of a game. It was really fun. And so I had to have, you know, certain strict rules. I couldn't, for example, include any cropping. Like, it's not fair if you can crop out the other women, right?
Right.
So that was the biggest thing, was just that no cropping allowed. And so often I'd find a picture and then realize it was really just a close-up. And in the real picture, the original photo, there was some woman like standing on the edge of the frame, you know, it was just very upsetting. And so that was ruined. Cause there could, you know, I had to find the original frame of the photo and have to truly be the only one in the frame. And then, it had to be, I had a minimum number of men because it was supposed to be, you know, a group of men, a large group of men, and the one woman. Otherwise, it also doesn't count. And then there were certain groups, very few, that I ruled out. For example, families. You know, a family photo with lots of brothers and one sister is not interesting to me. You know, I mean, it's interesting as any family photo is, but it doesn't count. My pictures are all about, in some degree or other, they're about public life. Yeah. And so they're a record of women coming into the public sphere.
And you write that all these photos with only one woman felt that they felt a little creepy to you in some ways?
Some of them did. Well, what happened was after a while, you know, I started getting that. There was a moment, you know, when I was deep in these very boring archives of group photos, because, you know, I should stress that the photos in the book, the one woman in the archives or in real life, you know, those examples were surrounded by millions of examples of no women.
Yeah.
Right? You know, like, in other words, this is, each photo represents a kind of moment in patriarchy where somebody, one of them, is entering the scene, and for whatever reason. And so there are also thousands and thousands of no women photos, you know, billions probably, I don't know. And so they're very boring, a lot of those pictures. You know, if you go into our institutional archives, right, you see, like, the fire department for every year and, you know, or the school or the this or that. But then what I started getting creeped out by was, after a while, I started getting creeped out by how often you could find the one woman. Like, there'd either be none or one. And so that started giving me the creeps. I started thinking at that point, things got a little, like, the plot thickened for me. Because I started thinking, you know, this is a more common thing than stands to reason.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd look at the photo and say, okay, where's the woman here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was kind of glad at the end you had all the photos again with circled the spot.
Sometimes they're very hard to find. Yes. They're really run the gamut again, because, like, sometimes you can't find her. You know, she's really almost invisible. But then when you spot her, it's just like, where's Waldo? Or, and I call it, where's Waldo? Because they're the magnet, you know. And one of them, she's really almost hidden. She's literally, you know, you can barely see her behind somebody else. But then there are other ones that, like the one I was talking about in the very beginning, Shirley Clark, where she's just, you know, she's the heart of the picture.
Yeah.
And everything is, you know, composed around her. So, you know, but each picture represents something very different, you know. So that was also my pleasure and joy, was to try and sort of tease out, like, the different categories that I was finding.
Emmy Humes, our guest today. Her book is titled The Only Woman, and it's great to have a chance to talk with her about her book today. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today, Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for listening on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Emmy Humes. Her book is titled The Only Woman, and having fun talking with her today about it. You can join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Bill in Madison called, couldn't hang on the line, but wanted to note that he's a stay-at-home dad, and 99.9% of his groups are women. He says it's an interesting dynamic.
Exactly. That's the reverse. Yes, I think he should take some photos.
Well, you kind of found that the photos fell into categories. You had like first one, doing their jobs, born or married into it, and token.
Yeah.
And token. Let's talk about the first maybe. Let's do that one.
Yeah. Like a lot of, I mean, as I started collecting from the pictures, I started trying to work out categories because they, you know, naturally started to fall into different categories. Now, possibly the biggest one and the one we think of most of all are the sort of firsts, like the pioneers, the groundbreakers, the trailblazers, you know, women who really pushed in to the public sphere and were ahead of their time in that group. And, you know, they're the great firsts, I call them. They're the firsts. And they're like, for example, well, you know, every one of them, a lot of them, all of the government ones, you know, eventually, of course, there's always going to be a Supreme Court justice or a head of state or an astronaut. And, you know, who make it. There's a great race car driver in here. And they're the firsts. And then there are some that I started to call the great exceptions because they're the firsts. But a first kind of implies a second, right? Or a third. A first sometimes, you know, and sometimes the second or the third, or I mean, definitely just the second, just to keep it simple, doesn't come for decades. You know, Madame Curie was a first, but after a while I started to realize, well, she is actually something more than a first. She's or different than a first. She is a great exception in my thinking because she wasn't followed for a very long time.
25 years before her daughter actually got the Nobel Prize, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, right. The next woman Madame Curie, of course, won the Nobel Prize in two different, you know, in chemistry. And, I mean, she won two different Nobel Prizes, which is just stunning. And then her daughter finally was the next woman to win a Nobel Prize in science. So, yeah, exactly. Great example. So she sort of, to me, became a different thing than a first. You know, she held that seat of the first for so long. And there are a lot of other examples of that in the book. Of firsts who become great exceptions. There's Jane Campion in filmmaking. She was the first woman to win the top award at the Cannes Film Festival. And she was not followed until last year. Like, I think it was another sort of almost 30-year span. So those firsts, I started calling them the great exceptions because in a way they served for a long time to, you know, be the exception that proves the rule. And the rule was men only.
Yeah. And there were women. I thought the category was just doing their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it, I mean, that was also, I started getting really interested because there were women like, I mean, a lot of the cases were like, okay, a nurse, you know, so there's this nurse in a whole, this turn of the century in Boston, this incredible photo of a nurse in an early operating room. And she's surrounded by not only, I mean, she's treating the patient who's a man, but, you know, there's all the doctors and then all these male medical students who are looking on. And so it's tons of people, of men, and this beautiful nurse. And then there's another one of a model, you know, a model in a French art class. She's a nude model and all the male painters, student painters are, you know, painting her. And it sort of started to figure out that a lot of these examples are of women who were doing very gendered jobs, who were allowed in or who were invited in. They were needed. So the nurse was needed. But these highly gendered jobs are quite interesting because they allowed women sometimes to go where other women couldn't go.
Mm.
So there's an example of one secretary, you know, in a huge boardroom of men. And they gave you sometimes a pass.
Yeah, she was off in the corner.
Yeah, she was hardly visible, the secretary, exactly. But so those gendered jobs, I started to realize like how deeply and obviously they were connected to the body. right? Like the nursing first came, the word comes from nursing a baby. And, you know, so many of the other ones are also connected in certain ways to the body, you know, like the female singers. The female singers, yeah. They needed that voice. They wanted that voice.
Yeah, and their body could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, some were born or married into it. You had a category in that area, too.
Exactly. Some of them are wives or daughters. Or, you know, and therefore they're allowed in. Some of them are, you know, some of the women who really were groundbreakers became groundbreakers because they took over a family business. Or they, you know, walked in their father's or their brother's footsteps. So that was another category.
Catherine Graham was probably an example.
Exactly, yeah. Catherine Graham was a great example. She was a reluctant trailblazer. You know, she turned out to really, you know, grow into the position of the publisher of the Washington Post, but she did not want to do it. It first went to her husband. I mean, her father left it to her husband, not to her. And she was okay with that, but then her husband died. So she sort of reluctantly stepped in and thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this. This is a man's job.
She was marvelous. In that job. She was marvelous in that job.
Exactly.
You spent some time talking about tokens and the Smurfette?
Smurfette principle. Yeah, the Smurfette principle. The Smurfette principle is amazing. It was an essay by a great essayist and feminist named Katha Pollitt, who writes for The Nation. And so she wrote this wonderful essay a long time ago where she was noticing, you know, in the kids' cartoon of the Smurfs, whatever, these little tiny sort of troll-like little blue creatures, you know, there are tons of male Smurfs with names that reflect either their personality or their occupation, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's Grumpy or Carpenter or whatever, there are millions of names and identities for the Smurfs. Who were all male. And then there was one single female creature who was simply named Smurfette. And that was it.
The token.
She covered the entire, you know, other half of the Smurfette race, presumably. Anyway, so that's, yeah, she is a great example of tokenism. And Katha Pollitt pointed out how in so much of pop culture, that Smurfette principle holds, like Star Wars. Yeah. You know, that Princess Leia is the one female, and she sort of covers that. You know, if you look at posters of movies through the years, you see a lot of Smurfette principle in action.
Well, and as you say, half the human race becomes one.
Isn't it weird, right? It's like highly effective representation. Yeah, very peculiar stuff. But yeah, I stayed with archival pictures. Like, you know, I come from documentary, so I didn't allow myself to get into fiction, into movies and advertising. But that's also very rich territory for spotting, you know, this phenomenon of the only woman.
And you cover a pretty broad range in terms of time.
Yeah, since the beginning of photography till now. And all over, so many countries. I think 20 countries are included. So it's really close. I mean, it's cross-cultural. I mean, I don't want to simplify, oversimplify, and you know, not acknowledge that there are tons of intersectional forces at work in all these photos. But it is quite a common phenomenon.
You know, there were an interesting, I found a lot of interesting tidbits in there. I'd look at the photo. I looked at the photo of Margaret Thatcher, and then I read what you had written about her. And one of the things that you pointed out was she had written an 800-page autobiography. And included her dad quite a bit, but not one word about her mother.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
And she didn't make a point of helping other women in politics. And I look back at that photo.
Yeah, yeah.
In a different kind of light. Were there some really interesting things or things that struck you about the women in the photos that stand out in your mind? Did you think about it?
Well, you know, I love, what I wanted to do was to highlight the differences in the individuality of each woman, right? I mean, I was really trying to go with, because when I look at the pictures, I tend to connect to her and wonder about her. In each individual case, I'm like, wow, what was it like for her to be sitting in this? You know, I'm looking right now at the picture of there's a gathering of the Society of Black Dentists for the state of Virginia, right?
Yeah.
The Old Dominion Dental Society, and in 1961. And so there, I don't know, is it a lot of rows and rows and rows and rows, formal picture of black gentlemen dentists looking very, you know, very gentlemanly. And then there's this lady, one lady, and she's the only woman dentist. And I just can't help wondering, okay, Dr. Wimbush, what was your life like being the only one in that room? I mean, it must have been sort of really wonderful and difficult. And so I sort of, on the one hand, I really wanted to get into the individuality of each woman as much as I could, try to find her voice and quote from her. And on the other hand, yeah, I was looking for categories and sameness, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that answers your question, really, but
well,
I hope it does.
You know, is there something, aside from being the only woman in the photo, is there something else do you think that these women all have in common?
Well, besides the fact that I would hate to oversimplify. There are a lot. I mean, there are a lot of trailblazers in the book, and heroes, I don't know whether to say heroes or heroines now. Right? It's so frustrating. But anyway, there are a lot of these wonderful, great, high achievers in the book. So that's for sure. But then, as you were saying, there are also these women who are there for other reasons. Because they married into it, or they, you know, they have a woman's job of whatever kind. And so there are very different circumstances here. I mean, there's one of the pictures is of a cook, a black woman cook for the Union Army in 1862. So her position there, I mean, something they all have in common, I think, you know, yeah, it's a very strange thing. I feel like there is something in common by being the mere fact of the only woman. But the circumstances are so enormously different, I would hate to oversimplify.
Yeah, I wondered if the men had a commonality about that.
Well, I started thinking when I started to get the creeps about, you know, how common it was, when I started to get this feeling like, whoa, something's going on and I don't know what it is, because they were so easy to find. I started thinking, and one picture opened it up for me, because there was a picture of some graduating naval, what are they called, you know, when they're graduating from the Naval Academy in Annapolis, way at the turn of the century. And there was this young lady in front with the guys, and she's named simply as Mascot.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a name, but she's called Mascot. And suddenly I started to think, because this was pre-tokenism, you know. It wasn't like they were trying to include a woman because they wanted to look inclusive, right? This is way before any pressures like that. This was something else. And so I started to really go, sometimes I think that it was what I now call mascotism, that men must have liked having just one woman. And now you'll have to talk to me. Tell me what you think of that. But I mean, I started to think like maybe it was sort of fun for them.
Yeah. I got that impression in several of the photos in your book, as a matter of fact.
That's so interesting to hear your point of view, you know?
Yesterday was the 25th anniversary of the death of Princess Diana, and you have a photo of her and surrounded by the press. I thought you had some interesting comments about the photo itself and what the photo might mean to you.
Well, that one was a toughie. I mean, it's a very intense picture.
Yeah.
Because it's what I call in the wild. Like, I started with just kind of formal portraits where everyone's looking at the camera and it's, you know, the photo group, classic group photo. But then I started adding some that are, I think I call them in the wild. And so that one of Diana is a real, you know, to me, a very dynamic, very intense example of an only woman in the wild, where she married Charles. She's this young kindergarten teacher, and she looks tremendously vulnerable on the street, surrounded by these male photographers, the paparazzi, who many people feel, you know, years later were responsible for her death. I mean, you know, as a group, not specific ones, obviously, but, you know, so it's a frightening, vulnerable moment. And to me, it conjures up a lot of other aspects of being the only woman, which sometimes are threatening. You know, you can be Bessie Smith, you can be like the Empress of the Blues, and you can be absolutely on top of the world with your male backup singers. But there's a flip side of that, which is also being vulnerable.
Yeah. I think the photo I opened to first in the book, but just by chance, was Aisha Evans' photo of and that is a very powerful photo.
Yeah. People have really this photo from this is the photo from 2016 in Baton Rouge, and it's it immediately became an iconic photo. It's of this very beautiful young Black woman standing in a flowing dress in front of the riot police. She's just about to get arrested. It's a Black Lives Matter protest for after the death of Alton Sterling, who was one of the many, unarmed Black Americans who was killed by the police. Anyway, so Aisha Evans is this very brave, solitary woman who's putting her unprotected body right in the face of these very they look like transformers, right?
Yeah.
The riot police, who are just shielded in every way, you know. And so she's putting herself. It's a great protest photo.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, her single purpose of speaking truth to power, so to speak.
It's very powerful photo. And there were other photos that I loved and loved reading about the women behind them. Betsy Wade was one. I love that shot of her, who was first women's copy editor at the New York Times.
Yeah. I have a lot of journalists, women journalists in here. There's some great ones. And women slowly fighting their way into that male bastion of journalism. And the photo of Betsy Wade is wonderful because she's right in the U of the famous U desk at the New York Times. So it's kind of great looking. And her story is amazing.
It is indeed. And she went on to be very powerful. Started at the kind of the low rung and rose right up the ranks.
Yeah. Well, you know, it'd be so interesting to hear what you think, because you witnessed, you know, you and I both have witnessed these changes, and you must have been part of these photos in your career. You've seen the women increasing from none to one to, I don't know. What do you think?
Is
that okay to turn the tables on you?
Yeah, sure. I was just thinking about my own life. It's just when I started in my career in college, the number of men vastly outnumbered the number of women students at Science College, and thinking about how that changed over the years. Now the number of women outnumber the men.
Yes, yes, yes. In education, women are really sledding. It's great.
Yeah, and so, yeah, it gave me pause many times to think about instances in my life, and some probably, I have to admit that it took me a while, too, you know? I'm sure, you know,
absolutely. We're all products of our time and place, right?
Yeah, we are indeed. How's your book going? How are things going with it?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, I have to say, it's my first book. I never expected to write a book, really. And so I'm over the moon, and it's been very fun. So far, I've been getting a really wonderful reception. There's been like great press, and I've also, like, one of the things I'm hoping is that the book will surface other photographs from readers. You know, I'm thinking like hashtag the only woman, and I've been hoping all this time while I was working on it that when I finished it, that readers would say, oh, I've got one. And that's happening. That's starting to happen, where people are sending in their own photos from their own lives or their mother's lives or something else. And that's been really gratifying. I have gotten some fabulous examples from readers.
You know, we've got somebody online, and here I have to apologize for not giving the number more. I got so enthralled in our company. But Karen in La Crosse has something that relates right to that. So let's go to Karen.
Oh, good. Good.
Hi. Hello. I have a photograph that I clipped out of the New Yorker magazine, and I've put it on my fridge. It's a black and white photo, and the woman in the photo is Dorothy Counts. And the man in the photo with her is her dad, and all of the other men are young men. Some look like they're 10 or 11 years old. Some look like teenagers. And Dorothy Counts is the first black student to attend Harding High School in Charlotte, North Carolina, September 5th, 1957. That's
the caption goodness,
under this photo.
Picture.
And you have that on your refrigerator.
Picture. Yeah, I clipped it out of the magazine. I don't know which issue of the New Yorker this was published in, but I was so taken by this photo and the bravery of this young woman. She, you know, mouth closed, straightforward looking. Her father looks rather grim next to her. She's wearing this is 1957. She's wearing a plaid dress, a low-waisted plaid dress. She's wearing a white, like a white tie, like a long ribboned bow. She's dressed
formal,
for her first day of high school. You know, and her dad is wearing a white shirt tucked into his pants. He's looking like maybe he's going to drop her off, go to work or whatever. They've dressed up to go to school, and they're surrounded by this crowd of people. As I said, all young men and boys, as far as I can tell in the photo, it's taken on the street. So the depth of field isn't real great, but all the recognizable faces are young men and boys, and they're surrounded by her, mocking her. One of them has his fingers up behind her ears, pointing his index fingers as if they're horns behind her.
I see. I just looked it up in Google. It's an amazing photo. Yes.
Well,
yeah, it's a beautiful photo. Thank you so much for bringing my attention to it. Incredible.
Well, Karen, you've got to take a look at the book here that Amy Humes has put together. It's called The Only Woman. That was just a lot of fun, Amy. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a joy and a pleasure to talk to you, really.
I really, really enjoyed going through it and reading about the women and looking at those pictures and pondering their lives. Thank you again.
Thank you so much. And I hope if any of your listeners have other pictures that they'll send them to you. Because I want to see them.
All right. There you go. And they can send them to me and I will forward them to you. How's that sound?
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Amy.
I love it. Bye-bye.
Bye. Amy Humes, and her book is titled The Only Woman. It's just a fascinating book. I really enjoyed reading it. That was her first book. Her career has been in documentary film, and she's certainly been honored for her work in that, but this is her first book. There are probably a lot of other people out there who may be working on their first book, or maybe they're working on their 10th book, and there's an organization in Door County has a festival coming up that relates right to that, and we'll talk about it next. I'm Larry Mehler for the Ideas Network.